Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Sleep Podcast with me, Rebecca Ribbing, licensed psychologist.
And with me, Lina Johansson, also a licensed psychologist.
This podcast is for everyone who wants to know anything about sleep.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, Lina.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Perfect.
What about you?
I'm actually really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a rainy gray day here, yes, in Malmö, Sweden. So I would say it's a typical January, yeah, day. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to be here. I'm also very excited to be recording an episode of this podcast in English.
Yeah, first time for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been asked to do that now, so that's what we're doing. It's going to be fun.
Exactly. And we normally do the Sleep Podcast in Swedish, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're both Swedish psychologists. Yeah. We work with an online clinic for insomnia, basically, which is called Learning to Sleep. And we've been releasing podcast episodes throughout the fall. Mm-hmm. So we had the premiere of the Sleep Podcast in August last year. Mm-hmm. And we've been going for a while, right?
Yeah, a long time now, with so many different topics, you know, sleep nightmares and burnout. There's so many interesting topics to talk about when it comes to sleep. So, yeah.
Definitely. And as far as our everyday work goes, both you and I work clinically with patients who suffer from insomnia. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do on an everyday basis. And we also love the topic of sleep, and we enjoy talking pretty much about anything that has to do with sleep. Mm-hmm. So that was the reason for starting the Sleep Podcast. And what can we say about today's topic? What is it going to be about?
We're going to talk a lot about performance, how sleep affects work performance specifically, and also sleep deprivation, what kind of symptoms of sleep deprivation, long-term consequences. So a mixed bag today.
Yeah. Well, just to start us off, Rebecca, I mean, why do we sleep? Why do we spend a third of our life, mm-hmm, in this sort of unconscious, passive state? Like, mm-hmm, what's the point? And I, yeah, know there have been entire books written, yes, on this topic. So I know that there's like not a really simplistic answer.
No.
But could you give it a shot and just kind of sum it up?
Yep, I can try. It is a complex question. And we know that it's not that passive. You know, sleeping, we thought, used to think, researchers, that it was passive. We just slept and nothing happened. But we now know, through many years of research, that a lot happens in the body and the brain when we sleep. So it's important for memory storage, for example. That's why when you're sleep deprived, you get memory problems. You can't remember things from the past or this like last day. So memory, what happens is that new connections are made between the nerve cells and the brain's memory structures when we sleep. So that's one part. And most importantly, for restoration and repair of the body. So it's our most important recovery period when we sleep, to enable good functioning the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is truly fascinating. Mm-hmm. Like you just said, that we now know through a lot of research done, mm-hmm, on sleep, how important this, mm-hmm, process is, and that it's not sort of that passive state that we, yep, originally thought it was. And you mentioned that sleep is really important for memory. We, mm-hmm, also know that sleep is very important for learning ability, yeah. Yeah. And a lot of sort of cognitive yeah. functions that are important for us as human beings, mm-hmm, in like a complex society, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not only
it's not just rest.
Right.
No.
I mean, there's really no doubt nowadays, mm-mm, that sleep plays a very important function, mm-hmm, both for our cognitive well-being, our mental well-being, as well as our physical well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I would say definitely that sort of the short-term consequences of sleep loss are perhaps a noticeable, mainly through the cognitive decline, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we've all had this happen to us, where we've had a really bad night and the next day you go through the entire day with this sort of cognitive fogginess, mm-hmm, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like you just feel slower.
Exhausted.
You feel exhausted. You can't really sort of focus and mm-mm, your attention span is really short and it's hard for you to be creative and come up with new ideas and
you get more moody. Also,
yeah.
So mood, irritability, you can get into fights easier, both at work and at home. So you're kind of a worse partner. If you have a partnership, then sleep really does affect our relationships a lot if we sleep.
Yeah. But Rebecca, what can we say about some of the long-term consequences of sleep deprivation? What happens if we consequently sleep less than we need to for a long period of time?
Mm-hmm. So long-term sleep deprivation can lead to an increased risk of many diseases. That's what they've seen in research, that it increases the risk of diabetes, hypertension, depression, even Alzheimer's disease. So many different long-term diseases. So, Lina, now you've talked about why we sleep and why it's important to sleep, but what is good sleep? So what constitutes good sleep?
That is such a good question. Well, the recommended amount of sleep for an adult is 7 to 9 hours. And this 7 to 9 hour recommendation is based on research that has indicated that if you get that proper amount of good sleep, then you are less prone to developing a number of different diseases, mm-hmm, both physical and mental, mm-hmm, illnesses. So we know that it is important to get enough sleep, but I would say that there's something that's even more important than getting those 7 to 9 hours, and that's getting a good quality sleep. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we sometimes miss out on. We start chasing the numbers, like the number of hours of sleep. However, we forget to think about the quality of our sleep, which is even more important. Mm-hmm. And when we speak of quality sleep, we really mean sleep that is uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. So we want the sleep to be continuous throughout the night without any interruptions, short or long interruptions, but it should be continuous sleep throughout the night with minimal disruptions. I mean, things happen. You might have small children, or you might have a pet that wakes you up, or whatever it might be, but we need to work towards a sleep environment that has as little distractions as possible, yeah, so that you can get a continuous sleep. The other thing that's really important is getting enough of that deep sleep. And deep sleep is one of the stages of sleep that we pass through, mm-hmm, a number of times throughout the night. And the deep sleep is that stage in which a lot of these very important processes in the body take place that has to do with restoration of the cells in the body. It has to do with activating the immune system, etc. So we know that the deep sleep is very important for our well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be important to mention that throughout the night, we pass through different stages of sleep in cycles of 90 minutes. So in a 90-minute cycle, it's approximately 90 minutes, which we should say.
Yeah.
But in those 90 minutes, you pass through a lighter stage of sleep, and then you go through something called REM sleep, mm-hmm, which is where we dream, mm-hmm, usually. If you remember having dreams, it's usually during the REM stage of sleep. Mm-hmm. We also pass through the deep sleep stage before then going back up to a lighter stage, mm-hmm, of sleep where, you know, if something disturbs us, then we might wake up.
Yeah.
During the deep sleep stage, we're usually sort of really passed out, and mm-hmm, it's really hard to wake someone up if they're in that deep sleep. And you might actually have experienced being woken up during deep sleep. It's usually a quite unpleasant experience, mm-hmm. because if you are woken up during deep sleep, then you feel foggy, you could even feel nauseous, your head feels really heavy, and
you don't
just
know where
not,
you are.
Yeah, you
drowsy,
can be really... disillusioned, really. Mm-hmm. Like it could be pretty scary. So during deep sleep, we should not be woken up, preferably, right? So during the night, we go through about five of these.
Four to six, depending on how many hours
yeah,
you get.
Of these 90-minute cycles of sleep. So the sleep is not it's not the same throughout the night. It differs, and it goes through these stages.
Yeah, and they're all essential. And even REM sleep is very important for us with processing emotional memories. And so all of these stages and all of the cycles are important to go through. So that's one take-home message, that we can't just pick and choose between the stages.
Yeah.
We have to go through them all.
Right. And when we talk about quality sleep, we usually mention the deep sleep. And if you are sort of very stressed, or if there is something going on in your body, if you have had too much alcohol, or if you're under the influence of any other kind of drug, then usually what happens is that you don't get very much of that deep sleep. And so you might be sleeping, but you have a light sleep that is not really giving you sufficient recovery. So we do have individuals who come to us and say they're sleeping 7 to 8 hours, but they never feel rested. No. They never wake up feeling refreshed, and they have a hard time making it through the day, really, without taking naps or drinking a lot of caffeine. And that's also a major problem. So it's not only sort of the amount of sleep you get or the hours you get, it's also about getting that quality sleep. What's also, I think, really interesting to mention is that when you look at an entire night, we also know from research that the larger amount of deep sleep is acquired throughout the first 3 or 3.5 hours of sleep. So we get sort of the most amount of deep sleep in the first hours that we sleep. And then as the night progresses, we get less and less deep sleep. And then those last couple of cycles, as we get closer to the morning, we get more REM sleep. So that's why, if you've noticed sometimes that your most intense dreams are close to the time when your alarm rings, that's because you get the more REM sleep as you progress through the night. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, right? And a lot of people wake up in a dream because of the REM sleep in the morning. So yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah.
We love this. We're sleep psychologists.
And with this said, I just want to sort of emphasize what you said before, Rebecca, that we're not in any way saying that you can sort of skip out on those last couple of hours of sleep because you're not getting any deep sleep the second half of the night. All of these stages of sleep are important, and all of the stages serve a function for the body. So just like you said before, the REM sleep is very important for helping us process emotional memories and experiences. So you cannot skip out on your REM sleep. I would not recommend anyone on doing that. However, we know that the deep sleep is extremely important for our restoration and recovery. So if we don't get the deep sleep, it will be noticeable throughout the day that you haven't really had a good quality sleep.
Yeah. And all of this talk about stages and the hour recommendations gets me thinking about that the warrior myth mentality, the you can sleep when you're dead. You know, we all heard it that, successful CEOs, they sleep 4 hours or 3 hours and still, you know, they're successful. But what do we think about that myth, Lina?
Well, we do know that there are some individuals who are short sleepers. So we have a small percentage of people.
Like 1%, I think?
Yeah, it's not many.
Not even 1%.
Yeah. So a tiny, tiny part of our population can sort of get by on 4 to 5 hours of sleep. However, that is extremely unusual, mm-hmm. I would say. So for the average person who is running on 4 to 5 hours of sleep, I would say it's not a good idea if you want to stay healthy and get the most out of your work day and your life in general, right? Because we know that sleep deprivation can really impact your overall quality of life, right? Yeah. It's not only sort of your performance at work, it's also how you interact with the people you love. So you mentioned before, Rebecca, that sleep deprivation has a tremendous effect on our ability to relate to others. So we get more irritable, we get mood swings. There are also studies shown that we have a harder time being empathetic towards others when we've not had enough sleep and we're sleep deprived. So I think it's important to mention that it's not only performance that is affected by sleep deprivation. It's sort of life in general, right?
Yeah, life in general, definitely. And I think it's a dangerous myth. It's more of like an unhealthy, dangerous myth. This sleeping 4 hours and getting by on that, it's not good for most people. I would say 99%. It's not a good idea.
Yeah, for sure. Just to add to what you were just saying, Rebecca, with this warrior mentality and you know, we can sleep when we're dead and that kind of mentality, I think to this date that one of the first things that we compromise or sort of down prioritize when life gets hectic is sleep, right? Because we just assume that it's something that I can catch up on during over the weekend, or you know, it's as you're trying to juggle all those tasks and responsibilities that you have in life, it's easy to cut off on those hours of sleep, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's more common to compromise on sleep than, for example, food. But that's not a good idea. And that's what we know, that compromising on sleep to work more or to have more time, it actually leads to loss of productivity at work, which can then increase, you know, the sleep loss again, because then you have to make up for that lost amount of sleep and work productivity. So it becomes an exhausting cycle. And we also know that when we're stressed, then we tend to sleep less, and then we get even more stressed because our tolerance for stress goes down when we're not sleeping well enough. So it just becomes this really vicious cycle that we can't handle, and it gets worse and worse. And sometimes it can lead to pretty bad consequences, like burnout, for example, or trouble at work, trouble with relationships. So yeah,
I totally agree. And I think that's one of the sort of major concerns that our clients bring to us, right? So they've sort of got stuck in this cycle where they've down prioritized sleep just to fit in more activities, right? So it's obviously a lot of work usually, but also other activities, like, you know, I have to work so many hours, so then I have to go to bed really late because I still want to spend time with my family, or I still want to, you know, be able to watch my Netflix show, whatever it is. Like, we're not willing to really compromise on anything, so we end up sleeping less, right? Because there's so much we want to do. And I think that's also sort of a very particular problem of our time, right? Because nowadays there's really no problem for you to entertain yourself or keep yourself busy 24/7, right?
No. And you only have 24 hours
exactly.
In a day.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's so much you can do. And I mean, I can relate to what it was like when I was younger, where, you know, after a certain time, like, there was nothing to watch on TV.
No.
You know, unless you had like the really fancy network channels, which I didn't have in my house. And we didn't have smartphones, right? So you couldn't be on social media. So kind of when, you know, when lights were out, the only thing you really could do was like fall asleep or read a book. Yeah. But, you know, when you're a teenager, like,
not that fun.
No, that's not what you do. You fall asleep. Mm. And nowadays there's just so, like, there's an endless, you know, endless opportunity and endless possibility to entertain yourself or keep or yourself work. Busy yeah. or work. And I think that's a major challenge when it comes to sleep, right?
Yeah, because that's one of the biggest issues we have with sleep, is that when we're constantly available, we can work from our bedrooms, from our computer, then that's what happens with insomnia, which is the clinical definition of having a sleep problem that's been going on for a while, and it's impacting your daily functioning. So not sleeping well enough. But that's what happens with insomnia, is that you tend to do other waking activities in bed. You might be working in bed, watching television in bed. And then over time, the bed and the bedroom becomes associated with wakeful activities, with stress, worry, and then it becomes impossible to sleep over the long term. So that's an important point to make, that in order to sleep well, the bed and bedroom needs to be associated with sleep and rest and recovery.
Right. And another major issue that we see often is the fact that we don't take time to prepare ourselves for sleep, right? So we kind of assume that sleep is something that we can just control, or we can decide that now is a good time to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Now I have time to sleep, so I'm just going to put my head on the pillow and I'm going to fall asleep. No. And that's not really how it works with sleep. So it's not a process that we are in complete control over, in the sense that we can decide that now is a good time to fall asleep. We need to help our body and our brain to prepare for sleep. Mm-hmm. And the best way of doing that is really signaling to your entire system that we're sort of moving away from daylight, wakefulness, activity, to that, you know, darkness, slower pace, just relaxing, and then eventually falling asleep. But I think the mistake that a lot of people make today is that they sort of they keep on going all the way up until it's time to go to bed. I mean, it could be working on your computer, it could be watching Netflix, it could be scrolling your phone or on social media. Could be talking on the phone, whatever it might be. You're sort of highly activated, and then you expect to be able to fall asleep right away, and that's not really how it works. You need to really rewind and calm down and really help your body and your brain to
prepare
that it's almost time to go to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people, like, we have our colleague Andreas at work, he says, oh, I can fall asleep right after I look at my phone. And yeah, some people can. But if you're experiencing problems with your sleep, you're not getting well enough or rested during the day, then it's a good idea to not do these things and to help yourself wind down before you go to bed, because it means a lot to most of us. But some people can, of course, make it anyways. But
I mean, we know for a fact that using your phone or your iPad or any screen really is something that could inhibit the release of a sleep hormone called melatonin, right? Mm-hmm. So our brain can't really distinguish between the light exposure from the screen and daylight, essentially. So what controls the melatonin production in our brain and body is essentially daylight. So we're predisposed as human beings to be awake and active during the day. So as the sun starts to set and it gets darker outside, melatonin is released in our brain and our body. And that's what controls our inner biological rhythm, that circadian rhythm, that has to do with the fact that we're predisposed to be awake during the day and sleep throughout the night, right? And if we interfere with that system by exposing ourselves to a lot of light in the evening, that could make it harder to fall asleep. Mm-hmm. And
didn't we see that study that if you looked at your phone or your phone screen when you woke up during the night, it was equivalent to drinking 2 cups of espresso?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a very, very interesting study that had actually found that the effect on the brain, sort of the brain activity that was going on after watching your phone in the middle of the night was equivalent to what happens if you have 2 espresso shots. Yeah. And that's pretty wild if you think about it.
Mm, yeah, yeah. And what also is important to remember is that our phones, not only the light emission, it's also stress. So it could be that you get a work email or you get a text message from someone that you love and something happens. And so the phone is also equivalent to stress, or equals stress for a lot of people. So that's why it's better to avoid screen time 1 hour, at least 1 hour before bedtime. That's our recommendation.
Yes. And I would definitely say, as with anything really, it's individual. Like you said before, Rebecca, if you're a person who doesn't experience any problems falling asleep and getting a good quality sleep, then and your habit is watching Netflix or, you know, scrolling your phone right before you fall asleep, I would say, okay, then continue doing that. Then it's not an issue for you. But if you experience any sleep problems whatsoever, I would be very cautious about using screens 1 hour before bedtime. So what are, I mean, if we were to give any recommendation, what should you do instead? What is a good activity besides watching your screen?
Okay, so I would say you can give yourself 1 to 2 hours of winding down, relaxing, taking away external stimuli, like a lot of screen time and television. So instead of doing that, you could read a good book. You can ask your partner for a massage. You can dim the lights down in your home or apartment. And you can, you could draw. There's so many things. Fold laundry. Prepare the next day's, you know, work clothes. There are so many different things. And that's what happens with a lot of our patients, that when we give these rules, they start to imagine and start to create something that they've never done before. And there are so countless of other options that we can think about to do instead of watching our phone or watching television.
Yeah. And I usually tell my clients, I mean, you don't have to become a meditation expert or a mindfulness expert, or you don't have to start practicing yoga if that's not something that you already do and enjoy, because you can give yourself that winding down period, and you can give your brain a little bit of rest just by doing those normal things around the house that needs to be done anyway, right? So you said folding laundry. It could be, you know, putting away the dishes. It could be just like putting things in the right place. I mean, geez, I spend hours doing that every day. I feel like just putting the kids' toys away and, you know, whatever it might be. So just doing things that are fairly easy, that does not require a lot of brain activity, are things that are good for helping you winding down. And then, of course, in a CBT therapy, what we do every day with our clients, Rebecca, we include methods such as mindfulness and breathing
relaxation techniques.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, of course, there are a number of such techniques that could be helpful, but I would say it doesn't have to be
anything
really
specific or complicated. No. And it could just be take more time, slow down. So it could be brushing your teeth for a longer period of time, or massaging your face with face lotion for a longer period of time. So just going through the motions that you usually do, but at a slower pace.
Yeah.
Or petting your cat like I do. It's a lot of therapy for me.
Yes, if you have a cat, then please pet it. Or a dog.
Or a dog, yeah. Yeah. Any kind of household pets.
I also often recommend taking a warm shower or a bath if you have that possibility. But taking a warm shower is very effective in the sense that for our body to fall asleep, our body temperature mm-hmm. actually needs to drop a little bit. That's why we also recommend the bedroom to be cool. And the warm shower, it helps our body to cool down faster, because in the heat, like, all your pores will mm-hmm. open up and the body will release a lot of heat, mm-hmm. Which then makes it easier for the body to actually drop in temperature. So that's yeah. also a good idea, right?
Yeah. And now when we're talking about it, the bedroom environment mm-hmm. is also important. So a nice comfy mattress and dark out curtains, maybe in the summer, Sweden months when it's so light outside, and so cool, dark and quiet. That's what we usually recommend. And if you have a snoring partner, you could invest in some earplugs or maybe separate bedrooms, even though it's sad.
Yeah, that's what we call a sleep divorce, right?
Yeah. Not recommended, maybe.
Well, I mean, it could be helpful for, you know, yeah. For a while if you have a hard time falling asleep.
Mm-hmm. To get back on track.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not a bad idea. But then again, we're sleep experts and not relationship no. experts. So I don't know if you should take us up on that advice.
No. Yeah.
All right, Rebecca. What are sort of the short-term consequences of a poor sleep when it comes to job performance?
Well, there are many cognitive impairments that happen when we're sleep deprived, and also consequences. So we become more impulsive. So we make more mistakes and worse decisions, and we become worse at problem solving. So we're not able to come up with effective or creative strategies at work. It could also impair teamwork, because we could become more moody, irritable. So we could start fighting with our coworkers because of sleep deprivation. It's pretty serious. And also decreased motivation. We've seen that in studies and people who are sleep deprived become less motivated at work, and also increased absenteeism. So people stay home because of sleep loss, and even when they're at work, they're less productive. So it's pretty bad for work performance when we're not sleeping well enough. And it can also impact leadership. So that's what we've seen in studies as well, is that leadership can quickly deteriorate when our leader is not sleeping well enough. But on the other hand, good sleep comes with a lot of positive outcomes for work performance. So it can be, increased learning, knowledge acquisition and memory, and also it boosts employee engagement. They've seen that in studies as well. So it's just a positive to sleep well.
Yeah. And there was this really interesting Harvard mm-hmm. study done in which they found that an employee who's suffering from insomnia, which is, like we said before, the clinical term for not being able to sleep and not getting sufficient sleep, the average worker with insomnia actually had an annual loss of 11.3 days of productivity. Mm-hmm. So 11.3 days of productivity was lost mm-hmm. annually for each individual yeah. who was suffering from insomnia. So that is pretty serious, and something that we actually could do something about, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. a lot of individuals suffer from insomnia without knowing that there is really effective help out there, and there are things that you could do, sometimes fairly minor changes in your routines that can have a major positive impact on your sleep. I think it's also important to distinguish between sleeping poorly every now and then mm-hmm. And having a real sleep problem, right, that you need to do something about. So what is the difference? How do you know if you have a sleep problem? How do we define a sleep problem or insomnia, for example?
Okay, so insomnia is if you're not getting enough sleep, so you're not getting well rested or restorative sleep for more than 3 times a week, and it's been going on for over a month, and it leads to impairment in your daily functioning at work or in social life or at home. And what I want to say about not sleeping well enough, it's also about not being able to fall asleep at night or waking up during the middle of the night and not being able to fall back asleep, or just getting enough interruptions during the night in your sleep. If that happens for that amount of time during the week, then you might have, could be suffering from insomnia and should consider seeking help. And that's where we come in CBT therapy, which is the gold standard treatment method for insomnia. And it also, scientific evidence has shown that CBT has better long-term effects than sleeping pills and also has much less side effects. So that's the gold standard treatment.
Yeah. And CBT is short for cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yes, it is.
For those of you who are not familiar with CBT. And when we talk about CBT in relation to treating insomnia, it's a specific set of methods and techniques that are used for individuals who have trouble sleeping. So I would say if you've been through a CBT treatment before, then some of the methods you might recognize, and then some of the methods that we use are sort of developed specifically for treating sleep problems. To sum up, insomnia is defined by having trouble falling asleep or maintaining your sleep at least 3 nights a week. And it's something that has been going on for at least a month. So if you're experiencing trouble sleeping on numerous occasions throughout the week and it's been going on for more than a month, then it might be a good idea to seek professional help, because you could have insomnia. And if you do, the good news is that we know that insomnia can be effectively treated with cognitive behavioral therapy. I would also mention that there's another very common condition that has to do with sleep difficulties, which is called sleep apnea. And it's not the same as insomnia, because sleep apnea is physiological. So it has to do with difficulties breathing throughout the night. And if that's what you're experiencing, you should also seek help. But in that case, if it turns out that you're suffering from sleep apnea, then there's a different type of treatment. So it is important to mention insomnia and sleep apnea are the two most common sleep disorders out there. And regardless of which one you might be experiencing, I would say it's important to get help.
So what measures can an employer take to help fight the effects of sleep deprivation at their workplace? Well, I think the most important thing is to create a space and open discussion for sleep and highlight how important it is. So just talk about sleep, talk about how are your employees sleeping, how are you sleeping as an employer, just create an open discussion about it. So, Lina, now we're soon done with this episode, our first English episode.
I know. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy that we did this. It was a bit intimidating, I have to say, because we're so used to recording in Swedish. And I thought it was going to be a bit uncomfortable doing it in English. But I think we did okay, I have to say.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's about time that we practiced. and you and I have both lived in the U.S. for 4 years, you in New York and I in Texas. It was a while ago now, though. But
we both did our undergraduate, right? Yeah. We went to college in the States. Different experience, though. I was in the middle of Manhattan, and you were in Texas.
San Antonio.
Yeah, and I make fun of Rebecca all the time, because when we go for lunch, you always want to get fried chicken.
Yes, fried
which
chicken.
Which is, you know, you can take a girl out of Texas, but you can take Texas out of the girl.
No, exactly. Yeah. Good times.
All right. Yeah. So this was great, and I hope our listeners really enjoyed this, and I hope we were able to convey some important information on sleep. And I really do hope that you value your sleep, that you prioritize your sleep,
And remember how much it affects your work performance and your life.
Right.
Yeah. And if you do have any questions, just, you know, ping us on Instagram or write a message and we can answer it or take it up in another episode of the podcast.
Yeah, we love interacting with our listeners. So please contact us if you have any questions. All right. Yeah. So I'll see you again next week for our first Swedish episode for this season, right?
I'm so excited.
Me too. Take care.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao.